Welcome to the New York Times Popcast, your AWOK of music, news, and criticism. I am your host, John Карамоника.
День был холодный, а я влюблен. Нас было трое, жалко, что не вдвоем. Он был красивым на фоне меня.
Look, you've been paying attention to the news like I've been paying attention to the news, right? And it's very, very, very discouraging. It is incredibly challenging to watch and to feel alongside the watching. It's awful. And the situation in Ukraine, the Russian invasion, has become a kind of totalizing narrative. And at least for me, as an individual, it's made it kind of hard to start consuming other things. That's been hard. I don't, like, instinctually go for the, I was going to say the record player, but I don't have a record player, go for the streaming service, the television show, the film, the art gallery, anything like that. And I've been struggling because I've wanted to find a way to not talk about the war directly, but find a way that we can maybe tackle some subject matter that will shine some positive light onto Ukraine and to the culture of that country. And I was thinking a lot about music and Ukrainian pop music, Eastern European pop music, and I know a little bit about it. But I'm lucky to have a friend, Liana, who does pay attention to Ukrainian pop music and has been for a long time. And so on this week's episode of Popcast, what I want to do is kind of take an idiosyncratic tour, not a comprehensive, not a every song, every performer tour, but a tour of some high points in recent Ukrainian pop music, talk about some of the biggest stars making pop and dance and hip hop, and to try to understand more about how pop functions in Eastern Europe more broadly, because a lot of the borders are porous, and they certainly are porous when it comes to cultural production and output. So we're going to talk today about musicians that are popular inside Ukraine, but also what it means to be a Ukrainian star in the context of Russia, in the context of elsewhere in Eastern Europe. And so we're going to get right into it, joined by Liana Satinstein. She is the senior fashion writer at Vogue. She is the host of Neverworns, and she is here to talk about Ukrainian pop. Liana, welcome.
Thanks for having me, John. What an honor.
So, Liana, one thing I know is that this part of the world is obviously very personally important to you, and also you pay close attention to various levels of cultural production, various forms of cultural production. Maybe before we get into music and before we get into some of the specific artists that we're going to talk about, can you tell me a little bit about your personal connection with the region and also the ways in which music has played a role in your personal and professional life from Ukraine and that part of the world?
So basically, everyone thinks that I am Ukrainian or I'm Russian because I speak Russian and I'm always in Ukraine. Long story short, my grandmother came from Ukraine, but that is like every other Jewish kid's grandmother. She escaped the pogroms and she landed in the U.S. And basically, I'd always been interested in my past. Where'd she grow up? What was it like there? So essentially, I had the opportunity to study in Crimea when it was Ukraine. Yes, I am that old. And I studied there for a year and I lived with an amazing family who I still keep in touch with. And we've been keeping in touch and, you know, FaceTiming throughout this war that's been going on. They're actually in Western Ukraine right now. So I was there for a year, you know, and I grew up, it was like, I want to say in like 2006, 2007. So this was, you know, I was just sitting in front of the television the whole entire time in this tiny little Crimean town watching basically Russian MTV. I mean, at the time, a lot of what was going on was Russian music. It wasn't necessarily like Ukrainian. A lot of the news stations would be in Russian. A lot of the media would be in Russian. Obviously, you know, since 2014 Euromaidan, that's changed and it's more Ukrainian.
Yeah. And we'll definitely talk about that, because I thought that comes up with a couple of the artists that you brought up. I know that's a big deal in terms of their approach to music, that transition.
Yeah. And so, I mean, I sat and I was just exposed to, you know, club music, rap music, everything in the Russian language. And then later on, you know, I was still working within the Russian community for years in the United States every summer. And then I ended up going in college to St. Petersburg for a year, and I was hanging out with like this like hipster group of people. So then I got exposed to like that sort of Russian infused music over there. And then I was living in Queens for 4 years with a woman from Belarus and another woman from Uzbekistan. And we would just watch like the Russian version of like Jerry Springer and like watch like The Voice in Ukrainian all the time. So it was like, I have like this weird exposure to, I guess, Ukraine and former Soviet countries.
Before we get into kind of specifics on artists, can we talk a little bit about the fluidity of styles in the region across borders? Because obviously, you know, even though, you know, borders are false, borders are imperial constructions, yada, yada, yada. So, you know, there are ethnic groups that live in multiple countries that share a lot of common ancestry. And obviously, just the way pop and pop semiotics works, there are going to be pop ideologies that move seamlessly across borders. Can you talk a little bit about, obviously, there is a relationship between Russian pop and Ukrainian pop and those two music worlds? Or how much had they historically been in discourse, and how has that changed over the last like 10 years?
You always had Ukrainian musicians performing in Russia. They were always going back and forth. Maybe since 2014, that's cooled a little bit. And definitely, you know, over the past 2 weeks, I can't see anyone performing in either respective country. But yeah, I mean, for the most part, I mean, people were performing here and there. So.
And did the styles of music have a lot in common in terms of what you might hear on a Ukrainian radio station, what you might hear on a Russian radio station, etc.?
Obviously, now I think there is more nationalism in the music, or basically like an ethnic tie in terms of Ukrainian music. Like you have a lot of ethnic-minded bands popping up. Like there's one band called Dacha Bracha, and explicitly always sing in Ukrainian. It's very beautiful, and it has sort of like that like old school infused vibe. I mean, then of course you have like Okean LZ, and that's like a huge Ukrainian rock band, and they have strictly always performed in Ukrainian.
And for younger Ukrainian artists, primarily singing in Ukrainian, or some of both Russian and Ukrainian?
The ones that I follow, there's a whole list of them. For the most part, a lot of them were in Russian. You know, here and there they'll have a song in Ukrainian, but for the most part, they would switch.
And it was not considered sort of like unusual or untoward in any way?
No.
And we'll talk a little bit about what happened in 2013, 2014, which it does seem reframe things when we get to Alona Alona. We'll talk about that a little bit more. But let's start with who we opened the show with. This is, I'll pronounce it how I pronounce it, and then you tell me the right way to pronounce it. It's Ivan Dorn.
Yeah, Ivan Dorn.
Okay. I was really struck in listening to his music. Reminded me a lot of kind of late 90s into early 2000s, kind of like acid jazz into R&B, like a glossier version of that. Also sort of like stuff that ends up on like Stone's Throw Records in the late 2000s and the early 2010s, kind of like soul music with tempo, kind of. I was surprised at how familiar a lot of the textures felt to me. What can you tell me about Ivan and his background?
I interviewed him back in 2017 in Kiev. And I mean, he has such a wide range of musical taste. I mean, he's like a musical historian. I mean, last time I was talking to him, he was saying that he was studying like Soviet funk, which is a whole genre of music there. So, I mean, his range is amazing. And, you know, he did start as a pop star, but then you see later on into his career, like I want to say like in 2017, I mean, he goes into like this total like funk, freaky direction. And he came onto the scene as like the good pop star with like a hint of elevation.
And also one thing, and this comes up in your article about him and about him playing with gender norms and wearing women's clothing. Talk to us about how radical that was when he was choosing to do it.
He did say in the interview if I remember correctly, that he was nervous to perform in Russia in it. He was saying, like, I thought I might get arrested. And of course, you know, they have huge issues there with, like, LGBTQIA situation. It's pretty harsh. Same goes for Ukraine, but obviously in Russia, it is legally enforced there. Anyways, there is this history of men dressing up in women's clothes in Eastern European countries. Like, he's not the only guy to do this. Yeah. I mean, there's plenty of men who have done this in the past. I mean, you look at late 90s, early 2000s pop, and you'll see a lot of the men in these super high heels, dresses, and the scenarios aren't super, you know, hetero. So it's an interesting moment.
From a music perspective, like, how popular is he? How reflective is the music that he's making? The song we played, you're going to have to pronounce the name. Sorry, you said it's Northern Lights.
Yeah, Severnaya Siyanya. Yeah, I mean, this song was, like, huge. You would see it everywhere, and you'd hear it everywhere. I mean, he's extremely popular. He's a celebrity.
That song is from the early 2010s, but he's been releasing music for the whole of the 2010s and beyond. When an artist, generally speaking, has been popular in Ukraine, does that also mean that they are popular in Russia and they are popular elsewhere in Eastern Europe, or is it hit or miss, kind of?
If you're popular like this in Ukraine, you most likely will be popular in Russia. If you sing in Russian, I can't say the same for, you know, someone who is only singing in Ukrainian.
Tell me a little bit about the arc of his career, like, over the 2010s, because, like you said, this is an older song. How did his stuff grow or evolve?
Like any artist, he's developing, you know, he goes from, like, a saccharine sort of, you know, pop star, and then you start to add layers and you start to, you know, manicure your sound a little bit more. You start to experiment a little bit more. And then, like, you know, he had, like, that crazy song in 2017, Kolaba, which it was all in English. At the time, he was like, I want to experiment more with singing in English. So, yeah, I mean, he's still extremely, extremely popular. He's one of the biggest stars in Ukraine still. That hasn't waned at all.
Let's listen to Kolaba.
Once you go black, you never go back. She won't fly so deep that they lie. Middle class guys lost to the last.
Criminal backyards going on.
Criminal backyards going on. What?
To me, that's kind of where you hear a little bit more of that. What scans is, like, Britishness in terms of, like, relationship of tempo and soul and so on and so forth. That's where I was hearing that originally. Okay. You sent over, like, this robust list of performers. The next person is Luna. Tell me a little bit about Luna. And also, I should just emphasize before we did, almost everybody that we're going to talk about, Liana has covered on Vogue's website. And this is actually really meaningful. I mean, to me, I think this is incredibly meaningful. The fact that you have this job at a place like Vogue and you've chosen to use that platform to put stories about artists like this in the world with the imprimatur of Vogue, like, that's, to me, is not a small thing. So everybody should go and read all these pieces.
Oh, thank you so much, John. Yeah, no, I actually am very lucky that they let me do this. They give me a lot of freedom, which is nice. Yeah.
We salute.
Thank you.
Okay, talk to me about Luna.
Okay, so Luna, I love her. The singer is actually Christina Bardash. And the way that I found out about her was super organic. I was with my friend in Kiev. It was, like, one of those, like, late nights. We're driving down, like, you know, some street, coming back from a club, smoking a cigarette. I was with my friend Julie Poli, actually. She's a great photographer. Anyways, long story short, she, like, plays this song. And I remember just looking at her being like, who is this? I absolutely love it. And then she explained to me who it was. And I had her send me the link and everything. And at this point, Luna, she didn't even have, like, there was no iTunes. There was no nothing. Like, I had to go on SoundCloud, I think, or, like, YouTube. Oh, my God. And then I had to take the flight home to America, and I was listening to it, but I had ripped it from YouTube because I liked the song so much. So I could, like, keep on replaying it on the plane because she didn't have iTunes yet.
And what's the name of the song there?
It was Osen, which means, you know, autumn or fall, whatever. And it's really funny because she had the YouTube video at the time and it was super lo-fi. It was just, like, her and her cute little son outside of some, like, block apartment doing nothing. It's grainy. It's, like, very, like, early 2000s vibe. And she's just singing the whole entire time and doing whatever with her son. Yeah, it was incredibly beautiful. And now it's, like, crazy to see because she's seriously blown up, and she like sells out her concert. She was performing in Russia. She's like a huge star right now.
Well, let's listen to a little bit of Autumn.
I love Spelling Bee.
My boyfriend and I often play Spelling Bee together. By together, I mean sitting next to each other, playing individually and not cheating.
Sometimes when I open up Spelling Bee and I see that you have completed a few words on your own, I feel a little betrayed.
I'm sorry. It may have happened again today.
Oh, no, you did it again?
I have one friend who I will send screenshots from Spelling Bee of inappropriate words. And I always get nervous that I sent it to my parents or something like that.
Me and my dad, we like to play Spelling Bee together and help each other out.
I think I got it. See it? J-A-C-K-P-O-T.
Jackpot!
We hit the jackpot!
Panagram!
Yeah!
Now we're on Nice.
I'm Sam Azurski, the digital puzzles editor for the New York Times. You can try Spelling Bee and all our games at nytimes.com/games.
Do you feel like the music of Luna is reflective of a scene or like a certain segment of Ukrainian pop music that's different from what we heard like 5 minutes ago with Ivan Dorn?
Yeah, I mean, like, this, say it's like hot, sad girl music. I mean, like, that's probably why I liked it in the first place, was like, that's what it was. And like, you know, her lyrics are extremely beautiful. They really tug at you. It's like almost like stream of consciousness. I really love her. Yeah, she was huge. I mean, it kind of like, I think in a weird way, she probably like commercialized this underground scene.
And when you say underground scene, do you mean like a style of music scene, or do you mean like literally like a set of places, venues, like idea, like people who gather in a certain
like
kind of way? Yeah.
Like people in a way. Yeah.
Like sort of like the hipster.
Yes. Hip people, John.
Sorry. Hard for me to say those words. This was like the kind of mainstreaming of like the cool young Ukrainians, like hip young Ukrainians.
Yeah, I would say so.
Do you find it interesting that hip young people were listening to like music? Because like to me, the Luna records I've listened to are maybe a little bit more straightforward, a little bit more conventional than some of the other stuff that we're going to listen to today. Is it odd that the cool kids are sort of listening to like fairly what scans to me is like sort of straight ahead music?
Oh God. Wow.
It's not a shot. I'm just curious.
No, I know. No, I think like, listen, she's also a part of a cool scene in Ukraine to begin with. Like she's like inherently cool and people know her, knew her before Beyond the Music.
So her coolness is not necessarily connected to the style of music she's playing.
Ooh, I don't know. It's like, is that like the chicken or the egg type of argument?
What is the scene? It's like, what do people know her from previously? Like, what's the kind of universe that she comes from?
She comes from like an art creative scene, basically. I mean, I'm just saying people knew her before that. And I think what she does musically, it stands on its own, even when you take away her inherent coolness.
Okay, so you're saying the musical choices are not necessarily in discourse with like all the musical choices of the other people that we're saying, because she herself kind of like predates the music with some cool. Like she arrives and people are into her regardless of what she chooses to sing or how she chooses to sing it.
Yes, but I do want to say, I mean, the music, even if it was like some anonymous freak behind like Luna and we didn't know it was Christina, like I still think the music stands on its own. I think it's very good. It's like, it's beautiful. The lyrics are beautiful.
When you're engaging as an American journalist with artists in Ukraine or in this region, I know you journalistically, you have a curiosity and you also know that you can tell that story. You want to tell that story as part of like your overall approach of like, here's the culture I'm fascinated by. Here's the cultural production that I'm most interested in. What do you think that the artists want from this kind of exchange? Like when you come to them and say, hey, I'd like to cover you on Vogue's website, what do you think they see in it for themselves?
I don't think is necessarily to get press in America per se, or like visibility in America, but you know, everyone is reading American platforms, no matter what they are. And I think in a weird way, this sort of like solidifies them in their home country as well. And then people in their home country get to see this too. I mean, there are people in Ukraine who are reading Vogue US. And yeah, it just kind of exposes them even more.
No, and I think that's actually really telling that sometimes you have to look elsewhere to get the validation internally. That can happen.
Yeah, and not everyone in Ukraine is like up on what's happening, like the underground music scene, but a wider population might learn about it from Vogue US. Because often what happens too is like when I cover something in a place like Ukraine or any sort of, you know, country that's very, very proud of their people, this happens like with Georgia too, then the home press gets a hold of it and then they translate it and then they spit it out and then it like blows up from there.
Yes, this is like when I put Maddie B in my top singles list 1 year and then the local paper finally wrote about him. No, it's not what it's like. Anyway, just putting that out there. Okay, the next person on your list, very, very fascinating to me, and I'm extremely into, and that's Alona. And as a quick sidebar, if you go to her Spotify page right now, at the top, there is a message, the Ukrainian flag, and it says, while you are listening to music here, Ukrainian people are dying from Russian attacks. Also on YouTube, many artists that I was looking at for the preparation for this, the thumbnail images on their videos have been changed to either the Ukrainian flag or the flag with some kind of very similar message. So this, to me, this is an obvious way for an artist to stage a protest that will get seen. You know, everybody's going to go to YouTube to check your music, and the first thing they're going to have to encounter is this message. What have you been seeing? Because I know you've been paying close attention to what musicians have been doing, and we'll talk in more detail in a minute about some of it. But generally speaking, how have you been seeing musicians over the last couple weeks get involved in terms of expressing political perspectives and spreading the message about what's been happening in their country?
I mean, something interesting I've been seeing is, yes, I've been seeing like this YouTube thumbnail everywhere, which is in Russian, so the Russian listeners and viewers can see it. And that's also something else I've been seeing is like a lot of these artists, I mean, Alona is always speaking in Ukrainian, but a lot of artists who were speaking Russian in the past have now started speaking in mostly like Ukrainian. But when they want to directly tell their Russian listeners something, they like will specifically say it in Russian.
Oh,
interesting. And they might even say something where it's like, this is directly for my like Russian fans or listeners.
And when you say it, like, you mean like on an IG story or something?
Yes,
along those lines?
IG story. Yeah. And I've been seeing a lot of that. And then you just have, I mean, just artists are basically just doing like Instagram stories, like Instagram, like on the grid, talking about what is happening.
So if you go to Alona's YouTube page, there's actually a video of her sort of like directly addressing the camera, talking about what's been going on. It's the main video on her page right now. Let's listen to Big and Funny. This is a great video, by the way. Strong recommend on this video. I was struck by a couple things in your profile of her, okay? One is that the kind of importance of getting an Eminem CD bought for her by, I think, one of her parents, like brought back from an overseas trip. And then two, the language switch from rapping in Russian to rapping in Ukrainian, which happens in 2013. From a musical perspective, it's like if Eminem is all, if that's what you know about rap music, like you're going to end up rapping like this. Like I strongly recommend everybody go to her YouTube page, go to her Spotify. She can really spit. Like she's like legit. Like she's like, she really spits. It's actually a lot of fun to listen to. Again, I listened to a whole bunch of music in the last few days, but this is probably the music I was most impressed by, like on a technical level. I think she's excellent and could probably hold her own with plenty of other hip rappers from plenty of other places. Maybe that's what happens when you learn how to rap by listening to an Eminem CD. That's number one. Can you talk to me about some of the themes of her music? Like, what are the things that she kind of like turns to again and again? And where does she sit? Because I know there is a broad Ukrainian rap scene. Where does she sit kind of in relationship to the rest of the scene?
I mean, she's like pretty much like the only female Ukrainian
is she
rapper.
Even still.
I mean, there's like some version, like there's some other women who do it. Like Alina Pash is like a big Ukrainian like rapper singer there. I think she's very good at irony. She's very, very self-aware. Even her earlier work, I mean, she was extremely self-aware. I mean, she did this album, Pushka, and basically Pushka means like gun, but it also means like the and it's also a play on words. As she was telling me, it's like Pushka, and then there's like Pishka, which is a sugary fried donut and a larger woman. Which, like, Alona is like, you know, she's like a larger woman. She knows it. Like, you know, she's out there. She's doing whatever she wants. Like, I think she's, you know, she's fantastic.
We should listen to Pushka, which is also a very good song. Let's listen to a bit of that.
Тату на обличчі, не моя фішка, я просто пишка, пушка, пишка, дивна для всіх непрочитана книжка. Я просто пишка, пушка, пишка, тату на обличчі, не моя фішка, я просто пишка, пушка, пишка, дивна для всіх непрочитана книжка. Я просто пишка, пушка, пишка. Знайди місце між усіх сцен, кожен викупає, чого вартий саме твій сен, кожен знає, шука собі до пари, щоб свій сенс.
So something that comes up in your story about her is when she chose to switch from rapping in Russian to rapping in Ukrainian. So can you explain what was happening in the country at that time that led to her decision and also sort of like broader sense of nationalism in Ukraine?
She grew up in like more of like central Ukraine, and there they speak this kind of, it's like Ukrainian and like Russian often. It's like a mix. It's called Surzhik. So she grew up around Russian, you know, she said she spoke Russian with her friends, but, you know, then like 2013, 2014 happens. It's the Euromaidan protests.
And what are those for folks who don't know, like what exactly was going on?
Basically, they ousted Yanukovych, who was more sympathetic to the Russians and less sympathetic to the West. And they ousted him. And there were some major protests, you know, like after this, there was issues in Lugansk and Donetsk.
Yeah, which are the root of what's happening today.
Yeah, we're seeing that right now. And then after that, you know, I think Ukrainians, what happened was like they just this strong sense of nationalism. Like you started seeing it in fashion too, that people would start wearing like traditional dress. You would see people interpret traditional dress in their fashion designs. And then like you would also just see it and hear it in the language. You know, people would just start speaking more Ukrainian. And for her, that's what she did with her music. She said that she was like rapping in Russian. She's like, my friends liked it. And then she just like made the choice to do it in Ukrainian.
Broadly speaking, like following that 2013, 2014 period, do you feel like across discipline, whether it's music, film, fashion, television, whatnot, was there more of a self-reliance on Ukrainian tradition that you saw in these cultural outputs?
I can't speak to all of the outlets that you just listed, but I do have to say, like, I myself saw a surge, you know, going to fashion weeks, for example, in Ukraine, in Kiev, you would see all these kids putting in Ukrainian motif or an ode to it in their clothes. So, I mean, yeah, I think it's overall, yeah, you would see more of it.
Another person that you had sent over as a suggestion to talk about who seems really genuinely kind of fascinating to me is Max Barsky. Is that how you pronounce his name?
Max Barsky.
Okay. So you told me Max is extremely popular. I want to play a clip first before we get into some of the older stuff. Of almost everybody who I was looking at, he is maybe the only person who has a current song on his YouTube that references the situation that's happening in Ukraine right now. What is this song called, Liana?
Budi Vesna.
What does that translate to?
It translates to like it will be spring. This is in Ukrainian, it's not in Russian.
Хай буде весна. Там, де ми стоїмо до кінця. І нас не зламає війна.
наша віра єднає серця. Україна навіки жива.
And again, I encourage people to watch the video, which has like this incredibly complicated modern dance routine with like 30 or 40 people, and he's getting like tossed off from partner to partner. It's like, it's incredibly elaborate.
Yeah, he's extremely talented.
But the other thing that's been happening with Max, and we have chatted a little bit about this previously, is that Max has been very vocal politically in the last couple weeks. Can you talk a little bit about what's been happening? Because this seems to be like maybe the best example of a current popular artist sort of saying, yes, I'm here for the smoke. Like, what's going on?
All these artists have said something to some degree, but like Max has really gone on Instagram and he has really just said, like, this is what is happening. Like, my Russian listeners, like, this is what's happening. And he speaks to them in Russian, and he just gives it like a full breakdown, basically.
And what's happening with Timati?
Okay, so basically, yes, this is what I was frantically messaging you about this, like, niche drama. But it's not actually niche. I mean, it's, like, really, it's, like, a bigger...
It feels reflective of the times. Like,
yeah, and it's, like, a bigger... It is reflective, and it's, like, a bigger conversation in a way. So, essentially, what happened was Max was Instagramming all these things about what's happening in Ukraine. And then Timati, who's Russia's biggest rapper... ever. Like, I mean, this guy, he's insane. I don't even know what to compare him to in the US, because it's just like he's such a weird strain of like pop rap over there.
Yeah, and the songs are like, they're big, they're a little bit cheesy, like they're,
yeah,
but they're very like kind of like steroidal Drake tracks kind of.
Wow, that's why they pay you the big bucks. Hey, I love that. Actually, like, Timati does know Drake, which is really funny. And Timati has collaborated with American artists, which I find, like, hilarious. Like, he's collaborated with, like, Snoop Dogg. But, I mean, like, no one in America is ever going to see these videos.
Snoop, and it's like, Snoop's getting all these secret bags from like, Russia.
And, you know, Timothy's, like, always, like, on some, like, yacht or something with them. It's, like, wild to, like, rap in English. But anyways, okay, so Timothy is interesting. I mean, he wrote a song, actually, a few years ago that's, like, My Best Friend is Putin. And that is out in the world. You can watch it right now. Bro. He also is, like, friendly with Kadyrov.
Wait, who's that?
The leader of Chechnya, and like he's always he's always going there and like taking selfies with him. They're like, oh, I don't know. I think they're like hunting. Who knows? So, I mean, like, Timothy's like, and he said it, he's like, I'm very proud of who I am. Anyway, so Max was saying all these things on Instagram, and then Timothy basically did this whole response to him and was like, who has fed you for all of these years? Like, it's been us. Watch what you say. The world is round, and like, we're gonna meet again sometime. Basically, like this, like, threat. Then, like, he deleted. Then he like did like another video, and he deleted it. But like, that exists on YouTube. Like, wild stuff.
And targeted specifically at Max.
Yes, he said, like, I am talking to you, like, я обрушаю, like, тебе лично, like, I am, like, I'm personally, like, talking to you. Is what he said. And he was like, it's nothing. I mean, he basically was like, it has nothing to do with like Ukraine or Russia. He was like, I'm just talking to you about it.
But like, obviously that's the prompt.
Yeah.
Is this the highest profile kind of scrap between like a popular Ukrainian performer and a popular Russian performer that's happened in the last couple of weeks?
I don't know. I think this is like, at least for me, this is like the biggest drama ever. I mean, you've had Russian pop stars like say whatever, but this has been like the first time I've heard of someone addressing someone personally.
And has Timati been going at other Ukrainian performers?
Yes. Okay. Which leads me to Potap and Nastya. Potap is like the male artist, and then Nastya is the female artist. They were like huge. I remember in like the 2000s, they had this hit "На районе," which means like "На районе" basically means like in the hood. And it's basically just them and like their like local Ukrainian like town, like being hoodlums and like doing nothing. У нас на районі не дзвонять, а дзвонять. Стіни всі в балоні. Вася, що ти гониш? Потап went on to Max's side and then like did a video against Timati and was like, I am like on Max's side. And then he was like, you should talk to your mother. She's very smart. Damn, like it's like really just putting this like guy in his place. Like, talk to your mother. She's very smart. Like, ouch.
Prior to the last 2 to 3 weeks, did you ever see any kind of tensions between Ukrainian artists and Russian artists predicated upon tensions between the two peoples of the two countries?
Personally, no. I never saw it, no. I mean, maybe it existed, but...
But basically, this feels like very specific to this moment.
Mm-hmm.
Does it feel like it's cooling off a little bit, or does it seem like it's going to persist throughout the conflict?
I personally don't know. Even if it was to progress even more, I don't think it can, because they banned Instagram in Russia starting March 14th. And you're seeing all of these Russian artists all of a sudden posting links on their Instagram being like, follow me on Telegram, which is like an app that everyone uses over there. And also like, follow me on Kontaktia, which is like Russian Facebook.
Can you explain that a little bit? Like, are Ukrainian artists on VK? Like historically, not now, but historically.
Historically? Well, I don't know, because they banned like Kontaktia like several years ago. So you can't, okay, even if you're Ukrainian, you can't use it. Like, if you live in Ukraine, you can't access Kontaktia. So it's like actually weird though, because then like you'll have like a Russian artist be like, Timothy, I believe, did this, and also this other guy, Jigun, who's from Odessa, and he's like this like blockhead rapper who like lives in Moscow now. Anyways, long story short, he's like a Timothy, like his best friend. They were posting their responses and their views to this war, and they were like, go to Kontaktia here to find out my viewpoint on the war, which is funny because it's like no one from Ukraine can actually access that. It's only just like for Russians. I mean, of course, this information gets spread like on other channels, of course, but it's just interesting that we already know what they're going to say. You know what I mean? And like, it's just interesting because like they don't care in a way what probably the Ukrainian audience thinks. It's like an in vain sort of move.
Yeah, although it seems like not every Russian artist has been doubling down on pro-war, pro-Putin stuff. Like, there was a rapper named Oxymiron who canceled a bunch of shows. He had 6 sold-out shows, and he canceled them in protest of the war. There have been these kind of like little small moments of resistance, but I was really struck when we were talking about this that there's this kind of like, you know, you have actual war, you have disinformation war, and then you have this kind of like proxy war of like entertainers not taking up arms but taking up the positions for the hearts and minds of people.
Of course, it's not all Russian artists. Like, everyone is doing something that they can in like their own way.
Sure.
Yeah, but it's just a specific instance with Timothy.
But it's notable when you have someone who seems like one of the most iconic musical figures of this generation in Russia sort of taking on the war pose and basically saying, yeah, like, this is my guy and I want all the smoke, and like, I'm gonna come for you if you're gonna push back on me. That's, you know, it's hard to fathom like an American artist doing that, I guess, although country musicians and Trump, like, you know, it's like there's splatters of it, but it's like hard to fathom it at this level. When I was poking around to try to understand a little bit of like what's happening on the ground, like right now, I came across the YouTube chart for Ukraine, which is a lot more, it seems like a lot more hip hop or hip hop adjacent oriented in terms of songs that are doing really well on here. I wanted to play the song that's currently the number one on the YouTube chart in Ukraine, which is Stefania by Kalush. So this seemed to me like a little bit of like a folk textured hip hop adjacent style. What do you see when you look at this group?
I mean, they're super Ukrainian. The garb is, you know, ethnic Ukrainian motif. Everything is there.
So that song, and like I said, a lot of the rest of that chart is a little bit more hip hop oriented than some of the other stuff we've been listening to. And I know how big hip hop is in various parts of Eastern Europe and has been for a long time. So it'll be really interesting to see how that scene kind of picks up the mantle of political awareness, especially as this conflict gets darker and darker and darker. Liana, I'm grateful that you took some time to be with us today. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
That's our show. Listen to every podcast ever at nytimes.com/podcast. Email us at podcast@nytimes.com. Get on the Facebook group. Get in the Discord. Subscribe anywhere you get your audio content. Apple, Google, Stitcher, yada, yada, yada. Our producer, as always, is Pedro Rosado from Headstepper Media. We'll be back next week, but let's go out. I will say, as I was poking around the Spotify Ukraine charts and the YouTube Ukraine charts, I was struck by one song because it was called Putin, and I was sort of curious about it, so I looked into it, and it's by a rapper named, I don't know if it's Sipis or Sipis. He is Polish, and this is a, to say the least, an anti-Putin protest song that seems to be getting some traction. So let's go out with Putin by Sipis.
Jebać Putina, kurwę i skurwysyna. Jebać Putina, co znów wojnę zaczyna. Jebać Putina.